Xem nhau đi ra mà tết tổ nhà nếu khuẩn xếp xình gì tại buổi phó xong là bí đẻ thì đó là ní bà mà nhìn nhau mà nếu mi đẻ đủ nì đã anh xuống lộ xin ní bà ấy.
What the villagers didn't know was that the Burma army had laid landmines around the village as they left. This 17-year-old boy was entering the village with a group of 10 others when he stepped on a Burma army mine. The team medics responded immediately.
And unfortunately, some of the poorest countries are those that are blighted with these landmines, and we owe them a debt, because if you don't clear landmines now, the only way to clear them is either to stand on them or clear them safely. That means we're leaving a legacy for future generations of children who are not born yet.
In 2023, Myanmar reached an unfortunate milestone. For the first time, the country recorded the most casualties from landmines and explosive remnants of war of any country in the world. Although Myanmar had already seen decades of landmine contamination, since the 2021 coup and subsequent conflict, there has been a sharp increase in the deadly and indiscriminate use of anti-personnel mines, with children and other civilians suffering the consequences. Over the coming year, Insight Myanmar will be producing an in-depth series titled Navigating a Minefield, exploring the situation on the ground, impacts on survivors and communities, and humanitarian mine action that is changing people's lives. More information about the series, as well as explosive ordnance risk education materials, are available on the Insight Myanmar website under the Mine Action section. In addition to interviews with experts and leaders in this field, we will also be publishing the testimonials of people who have survived landmine and other traumatic injuries. Their stories have been translated into English and read by a voice actor, staying faithful to the personal narratives, but edited to protect people's safety and privacy. We thank our contributors for their courage and vulnerability in sharing their stories, and we recognize our collective responsibility to take action to prevent these senseless, indiscriminate casualties in the future.
Parents love. My name is Dossie C, and I live in Changwu Township with my husband and my 18-year-old daughter. We have a small betel leaf farm that we rely on for our livelihood. On those days that we do not pick betel leaves, we do odd jobs to earn our family's sustenance. Previously, my daughter hoped to learn sewing so that she might have a stable career in the future. My husband relied mainly on the betel farm for our family income. In June 2024, our village was raided by junta forces. Our family tried to flee to safety together with other villagers. Unfortunately, we ran directly into the junta force and were taken as hostages to be used as human shields for them. They told us to walk in front of them, and we had to follow their instructions. At one point, I heard a loud noise, and before I knew it, I felt pain in my thigh. Some of the villagers were also injured. I was hospitalized after this incident. Medical expenses were a huge burden for us, and apart from that, I felt sad, depressed, and I just wanted to die. But I tried to stay strong for my family. Now the wound is healing better than before, and I can walk slowly. However, I felt bad for my daughter as she had to pause her sewing class to take care of me, and since my husband was recently treated for a medical condition, my daughter had to work at the betel farm. My husband also wanted her to follow her dreams. Now, thanks to contacts provided by the village leader, I received 500,000 jet I could use for medical expenses, transportation, and food. I feel lucky to have received this assistance as I do not have to worry about medical expenses, and I was able to get proper treatment. As the local defense forces helped, the transportation cost going to the hospital was also reduced. Due to this, I was able to save a small amount of money which I used to enable my daughter to continue her sewing class. I am happy to see my daughter learning something she enjoys. Seeing her smile made me forget my injuries.
On this episode of Insight Myanmar podcast, we're happy to welcome Dr. Zamo Aung, who is the Executive Director for the Leprosy Mission Myanmar, TLMM, which is based in Yangon. So Dr. Zamo Aung, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on this episode of Insight Myanmar podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for your welcome. You invited me to talk to Inside Myanmar, which I heard about a few years back with a friend told about, and then check online a lot of topics with high interest to listen. So great opportunity, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you very much for that, and that means a lot coming from you, and we are adding to a another range of depth and diversity with your conversation to that list, so I'm very happy to be able to do that. I think the best way to start to understand what you're doing today, this the story of what you're doing in the organization you work for, go back quite some ways and beyond Myanmar, which will eventually lead us to the current context where we're looking at not just leprosy, but also support for landmine victims. But let's start that story by looking into what the leprosy mission is, which dates back to 1898, so over a century ago. So tell us about this organization.
Thank you. Leprosy Mission, it started, as you said, over 150 plus years ago. Actually, last year in November, we all gathered together and celebrated the 150th anniversary of the mission. Started as Mission to Lepers by Wesley Bailey and his wife. Those who are from Ireland went to India, came across with people affected by leprosy, who are on the street, very destitute situation, big heart towards them, and then went back home, told their congregation at the church, and then came back to come up with a mission. So miraculously, amazingly, the mission continued up until now in 2025. And right now, we all in different countries, around 30 of us all together. Some of the countries in the Northern Hemisphere are known as supporting countries, and some of us in the Southern Hemisphere known as implementing countries. We all together as a family, known as a Global Fellowship, TLM, the Leprosy Mission Global Fellowship, in a global family. fighting towards leprosy. So with the goal of 2035 to make leprosy zero leprosy, and zeroing of transmission, and zeroing of disability due to leprosy, zeroing of discrimination, which are the key core goal we all want to go and reach. But as a single disease among different constituencies, the known is less and less, especially in the West, traditionally, who are providing support and then donate for the cause of leprosies are dying groups of demographic groups of people, and the new generations are having a lot of charities, NGOs, and the causes they can choose from, and leprosy is less and less known. So attention is less and less. Amidst this, yeah, we all are determined and continue to fight, continue to be part in a journey. And here in Myanmar, Leprosy Mission Myanmar, we are known as, we have also a name in Myanmar, also called Anajine Matan Swang Kakwe Yine Pian Le Tutong Yin Lunga Apwe. So this is in the name in Myanmar. We register locally to be active in here in this country. So we are a local organization, locally led, governed by seven people in the board of the Leprosy Mission Myanmar, and the whole team, all Myanmar nationals working together. Not only addressing just for the leprosy, but also for the people living with disability due to the different causes. So that's how we try to continue to have relevance, be in the mainstream as much as possible, so that leprosy can be recognized and regarded as a problem still in Myanmar to tackle.
I'd like to unpack exactly what leprosy is for, I think maybe many of our listeners have heard of it, but as you've said, because the afflicted have been decreasing, it's lesser known, and that's I guess that's a bit of a mixed bag, because it's always better to, of course, to have less people afflicted with the disease, but then when there's less attention, there's less awareness and understanding of what the disease actually is. And so leprosy, which is also called Hansen's disease, can you unpack exactly what this affliction is?
Yeah, a lot can be read on online, as well as many topics one can easily find. But as we all know, leprosy is a disease in the biblical time, thousands and thousand years. People are living with so much stigma and discrimination they face. But scientifically, around the time Leprosy Mission was formed, 150 years ago, around that time, when this Hansen, the name you just mentioned, and the colleague around him identified the bacillus and the causation to the disease, that was at the point where in the medical community becoming to known as a disease causing the situation as leprosy. So this is a disease which been with humanity for thousands of years, and now back to 150 plus years ago, and then in the western part of the country, in the northern hemisphere, the affluent and richer countries having no longer diseases or problem. In UK or in Europe or in America, just only have people with leprosy who are almost all immigrant, among the immigrant who migrated to that part of the world only. No longer the indigenous new cases are coming up. That happened well before the better or proper treatment came, when this the living standard, education standards, the nutritional status, and that's helped a lot of gone of the disease in that part of the world. But unfortunately, in our part of the world, with this immense poverty, where people are living with poverty, below poverty line, we are still facing such a disease and condition, along with many other health problems, as we all know. So rather than talking about the wider picture here in Myanmar, leprosy is still a problem, but compared to other diseases like TB, tuberculosis, or malaria, or HIV, other public health problem, it is not that problematic to the eyes of the authorities, to the eyes of the mainstream healthcare workers, things like that. But in Myanmar, before COVID-19 pandemic, around 2020-21, roughly around 2,000 to 3,000 new cases were found, identified, diagnosed as leprosy. That was in a very passive way. The passive way I mean by that is that people with the suspicions of the disease came to the healthcare or health post or hospital. I might have this problem, and then the health worker diagnosed and received treatment. So that was the count for the leprosy. Not as much as we would like to see healthcare workers at different levels go out to the community, raise awareness, make known among the population so that they have more understanding about the disease and come forward on their own, with even with the little or no suspicion, I might have this problem. I have a sort of contact with somebody who have a history of leprosy, not things like that. So in a passive way, here in Myanmar, we are finding around 2,000 to 3,000 new cases in a year. But with this pandemic, and then combination of the pandemic with the military coup, in the year 2021, if I remember correctly, only 585 new cases were found. And since a little bit increased, just over 1,000 over the last 2-3 years. But that's the new cases of leprosy since 2020-21. But according to the statistics, and again, and the statistics in Myanmar is not very accurate or easily available, but anecdotally, it was around 300,000 people were diagnosed, received treatment, and they were released from the treatment, something called RFT. The number of people who were RFT over the years, it could be around 300,000. And among the 300,000, what they said is that about 1/3 of them are living with grade 2 disability, according to the WHO, World Health Organization criteria. So loss of sensation in their hands and feet and eyes, so that they have a vulnerability. They are more prone to get injury, and that injury is they don't feel the pain, so that injuries can be worsened, and the deformities like claw hand, foot drop, leg ophthalmos. So roughly, we can say around 100,000 people in Myanmar are living with disability due to leprosy. These are the part of the population living with disability in Myanmar. So next, in a moment, we can talk more about the disability prevalence in Myanmar. In 2014 census, it's at about 4.6% of the Myanmar population living with disability, having the functional difficulty and disability. In 2019, when mid-census, inter-census conducted to a sample population, some districts, And townships, it sets about 12.8%, higher percentage, simply because of back in 2014, the census was asked through the paper-based questionnaires. So not all the Washington group questions for the disability cannot insert it. Only four domains of the six inserted. But in 2019, the mid-censor, due to the usage of the tablet, software, so all the questions inserted, and then with more questions, so of course you can find more populations who are living with the functional difficulties.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned how there's a high degree of discrimination and stigma attached to Hansen's disease or leprosy that has occurred historically around the world in different areas, you say going back to biblical times, and also characterizes those with leprosy in Myanmar, of course. So can you describe this discrimination, bias, stigma, some of the reasons and backgrounds that those leprosy victims especially are have those challenges they have to face in society?
Yes. The main thing is that how they are look like, isn't it? Because of the depressed nose, the hands are claw or shortened hands because of the over the years injuries have been. And their bones are taken away so that they have a shorter hands, things like that. And when they walk, because of the foot drop, they are limping. That makes them a lot different from the futuristically different from people who are without leprosy, so to say. That makes a stigma. One of the story I heard a long years ago, when a girl sat next to a person affected by leprosy, obviously with this hands I just described, the shortened hand, and then she moved away from on a bus. She moved away from that person, and then next somebody asked her. To why you moved away from that person. And she said, "Oh, I was so afraid of that stump hand hit me or hurt me." Things like that, she responded. So what I like to say is that for many people view aesthetically look bad as well as also as a fearful thing. But in a matter of fact, those hands and feet damaged by leprosy, caused by leprosy because of the nerve damage, as you know, it damaged to the sensory part of the nerve and the motor part of the nerve and also the autonomic part of the nerve. With the bacteria attack to the nerve and the sensory part damage, you no longer feel pain, you no longer feel hot or heat or coldness, things like that, prick by a thorn. So you lost that the gift, so to say, from God, and then because of the bacteria attack to the motor component of the nerve, and again you it leads to the atrophy, the wasting of the muscle, which can easily cause you the ulcer because of the cushion lost in your bone, especially in your bone and the skin. For the hands, in your hands, we got this the eminence, and then also in the feet, you have a soft cushion. When you lost it, it is a less soft tissue between the skin and the bone. So when it can crush, you can get the ulcer easily. So like that girl have that impression of the fear of the leprosy affected person attacking to her was no logic. So that makes things like that make people fearful, shun away, and causing the stigma and the discrimination, I would say. But it's not that simple, isn't it? When when children or people affected by leprosy nearby a leprosy hospital or colony, when they are registered to a school nearby, parents of the other children might complain, or our children don't want to intermingle with the children of the leprosy because of the fearful of the contract of the leprosy. Things like that are also not uncommon. It is still, I used to travel with a leprosy affected person or on flight to a number of trips. One of the trips, a gentleman next to Usowin, who is now chairing the leprosy affected people organization known as MAPOR, that gentleman requested the cabin crew to change for his seat just because of his visual, the features appearance, which ended up with the switching, changing the seats. Things like that happen on a flight. But in another flight, a gentleman sat next to him, helped him to open up the meal on the flight. So when somebody was well-informed and also well-educated, if I may, having no such stigma and discrimination, can tolerate and understand. So these are the kind of a mix, the encounter, the experience we saw here again in Myanmar a few years ago, when a meeting among the MAPOR, the leprosy affected persons organization, they conducted a meeting, and in the evening they went to eat in the restaurant. The restaurant unknowingly let them eat, and then at the time of that checkout, when they are settling the bill, they realize that they are leprosy affected person, because it's a sizable group, and they are told go away, don't bother to pay the money. We need to throw away the utensil, things like that. That was not long ago, 2-3 years ago here in Myanmar. I think it was in Mandalay. So stigma is still there, like I said, to a different degree, in a different society. But if it is less informed, less well educated, I think the higher the stigma, it will be.
Now, one of the interesting things about what you've done at TLMM is to expand from your origins, which was looking at leprosy, and to, as you've already hinted, in looking at the those people with disabilities in Myanmar and seeing the range of disabilities that people have, the causes of why they are disabled, as well as how they're treated in Myanmar society, you've expanded the mission of TLMM to then also look at landmine victims and those who have lost limbs and helping with prosthetics. So can you describe the background as to what connection you saw in working with leprosy victims and working with landmine victims, and the reason for wanting to expand the mission to be able to encompass these groups and provide services and work with these diverse groups?
Thank you. And again, here in Myanmar, as you know, opening of the doors for the international organization, also the widening the space for the civil society, happened not long ago. We can say 2008 as a kind of a milestone, a point where the country became opening up. Before 2008, it was not easy. It was quite hard for any entities, any foreign entity to come and get register recognitions and the approval permission to walk inside Myanmar. That was a well-known fact. So as Leprosy Mission wanting to start walking in, Leprosy Mission was somehow started walking, we can say 100 plus years ago, when the leprosy hospital in Molomyang was founded, the American missionary, Susan Haswell, young missionary by that time, requested the financial support from Wesley Bailey, and then was a founder of the Leprosy Mission. he shared the money. The teachers also, if I remember correctly, not by that time, it must be as a significant amount to purchase the land in Molamyai, the capital of Mon State. That was a very outskirt of the city to keep the people affected by leprosy. By that time, Molamyai, Molamin, that was known to keep away the ugly features of those leprosy affected peoples from the city, from the city center, so to say, out of Molamyai. So that was the place where the linkage and support started. Over the years, it evolved differently. That place started as a leprosy camp, became a leprosy hospital. So that somehow leprosy mission have connection and support to a different degree. But because of the closeness of the country in Myanmar, leprosy mission cannot enter into the country as an entity like in other countries, like in India or in Nepal or in Bangladesh. Until 1998, when the hospital celebrated its centenary, there was a small opening. And that since that, I remember leprosy mission tried to get entry into the country. 1998 until 2003, when they sent somebody from UK to represent them and then continue to try to walk with the Ministry of Health, obviously, because of the leprosy. But there were challenges to overcome. The door was not open. During that time, Ministry of Social Welfare, who got the mandate to take care of people with disability. So that time, there was an approach, an attempt to also try to have a partnership with the Ministry of Social Welfare, Department of Social Welfare. So that approach was for the leprosy mission side. I understand that because people affected by leprosies are also becoming disabled due to the consequences of the disease. So they are no difference of the other people living with disability. So they need to be together in a group if they are together. So the social welfare also happily accepted that, of course, there are rooms for us to walk together. So since then, yeah, leprosy mission tried to walk not only for persons affected by leprosy with disability, just also for the people with different types of disability as much as we can. Not because of we have all the expertise and the resources and the money and things like that, but simply because of here in Myanmar, the services, the support for such people are not widely available. So then since 2008, our involvement and engagement and goes beyond leprosy. Also, on one hand, you may be sort of understanding that if we go and to a community, to a village, and we are just only targeting for giving the support only to the people who have leprosy, can be more vulnerable, can be more stigmatized, isn't it? So the if we expand the audience, the work we do, the work we want to do can also be augmented or widened. So that was the kind of my thinking. And also looking back up until now in 2025, we are still here in Myanmar. I would say simply because of that approach or strategy, we can continue as an organization so that our care and concerns and the attention to leprosy can continue while we can continue to our attention expanding to other people like mine victims and now in the conflict, in the earthquake affected area, people affected by earthquake.
I think one interesting area to explore that does kind of bind your work and ground it in Myanmar society and the people with disabilities you work with both leprosy victims as well as landmine survivors, we can say, is some of the beliefs around their condition. And Myanmar being a largely Buddhist country, there are beliefs in karma as to why things happen in this life that were that the cause happened in a previous life. And when and so for those with disabilities, the way that this plays out can sometimes feel a bit like blaming the victim. It can be hard to seek equality and to move past these karmic interpretations that I think, and I would venture to say, I've had discussions with karma with very educated Buddhist scholars and as well as monks, and I would say that karma is the Buddhist concept of karma is extremely complicated, and a simple cause effect line of you know, this happened in this life, so therefore it must have been something bad you did in the last life. That's everyone I've spoken to that has a deep knowledge of Buddhist concepts of karma has said this is far too simplistic for our minds to be able to comprehend. And yet these simplistic versions of karma, the way it's understood often in Burmese Buddhist society, has led to certain kind of discriminations and biases towards both those who have survived landmines as well as those who are afflicted with leprosy. So can you unpack the nature of these karmic beliefs that result in a kind of blame the victim mentality, and what you have done and what those you've worked with have done in the struggle, in the ongoing struggle for equality in Myanmar society?
I mean, yeah, this is the teaching, isn't it, that because of the deep-rooted Buddhism and the country, and what you did in the past life will reflect with your current present life, and also about the wealth. When you are wealthy now because of your good deeds, and when you are not wealthy because of something which is, as you said, a lot of beyond the explanation. People affected by leprosy, yes, these are quite obviously seen in many communities, and also for the other types of disability, there are degrees of the blaming for their past life, but more and more, I think, because of the challenge and the problems we are facing as a country, you know, over the decades, or 3-4 decades already, isn't it? A few days ago, one of the topics in the news, 37 years now, why we are not having democracy. That's missing, together with the country being the poorest of the poor countries in the world, least developed countries, the potential of the populations cannot be realized, and many are still facing challenges until now. So since last 4-5 years, even compared to prior to 2021, when you walk in the morning, especially in my neighborhood, I used to get up early and walk for a health reason exercise. You will see people passing through the garbage piles. When you walk about, you know, half hours or 1 hour to a garbage piles, more than 3-4 groups of people every morning pass through and dig into the garbages, find the things with the value, so that they can and go and sell, so that that's a way of the income for them. So the situation change a lot. The poverty become deeper. That will cause more diseases, and among the diseases, leprosy can also be transmitted more. So that one aspect, and also other aspect like conflicts, especially last 4-5 years, made much larger number of people experience their body parts lost due to the conflicts. So which are quite obvious to blame, other than karmas or the past things like So, yeah, rather than deep dive into the attitude, how people blame for the individual, the causation, the cause of the disability, the cause of the leprosy in the community, blaming for that of the past life, and causing us to make equal, causing us to make them acceptable more into the wider society, whether we are facing challenges and barrier, of course, to an extent, and of course, we need to do a lot more awareness raising around that, but there are also a lot of awareness raising among the wider populations and different strata, even among the healthcare professionals like us, to have a better, proper understanding, more sympathy and empathy towards them, and also to need to have a right model of support, what people with disability are in need. As you might aware, different models like a medical model, which was so intense and immense among the medical professionals who want to fix if you are disabled, if you are bodily not functioning, let's try to fix to be functional again. Otherwise, no, you cannot be as other in the society. That's a kind of a medical model. And then the charitable model, you know, because you are suffer from this condition, the disability, leprosy, whatever, more linked with the karma thing, so that they gave away, they gave financial support or kind or things like that. That's a charitable model, whether the need of the person, not based on the need of the person. Now we have a social, more sociable model, very much based on the human rights, which is the hardest thing we see, even, as I said, among the healthcare professionals, among the educated people, to view that way, isn't it? So, yeah, I will say, yes, the degree of the blaming due to the past life, to an extent there, probably that will translate, I think, hugely within the society, opting for the charitable model because of that concept. So that, like, a number of charitable foundations donating, the people with disability looking as an object rather than as a human being like you and me, to make them becoming an equal participants in the wider society, I would say, which will be more harder, difficult, if more and more people use that charitable approach, unless we all enshrine into the social model, sociable model, viewing them as a equal human beings. Because of the view of the society, more probably more on this karma thing, maybe charitable model is more predominant, making this is not me, this is for somebody else. This should be the way we provide. Yeah.
What have you done to try to combat this and contest this karmic view, and to try to advocate for equality and against these kind of and to create a new narrative that beyond these kind of traditional Buddhist beliefs that impact landmine survivors and leprosy victims?
Yeah, we try our best, and again, as an organization, the route we come from, we try to align more with the we try to align faith community as much as we can. But when we try to align with the faith community, aligning with churches is a little bit easier. I don't say it is easy. Even the more and more churches we would like to yet to get engaged in the widening the raising awareness, the need to take care of people living with disability in the community still a long way to go. On the other hand, reaching to the monasteries, monastic institutions, monks and nuns, yeah, or maybe one thing, we're not trying that hard, maybe, and also, yeah, the still, I think, yeah, the those institutions still yet to view this is as a thing to partake as one of the things the monasteries or the institution need to be done in the community where they are. In the faith community, in among the Christians, we try to push to the churches, you know, not only living themselves in the community, but also try to reach out, try to be make friends with families who are living with having a family member having disability, because the enormity of the burden they are shouldering is a lot higher than one can. And imagine if someone come extend their hand, even just that gesture, the relief can be made. So that way we are gently walking towards it. But if more monastic institution follow that way, that can also be a helpful thing, I can imagine, simply because the monks in the communities are powerful and influential. I think they can also play a big role of advocating, promoting about the rights of the person with disability. Like, you know, what if a person who cannot listen to a summon made by a monk, will he or she not get that the message? And then what happened? Will he not be able to go to the heaven? Things like that. I think that is not widely taken or widely accepted, or still I am finding yet to prepare more proactively so that different types of person living with disability also can have a chance to get that opportunity. While saying so, the Christian community, the churches are also having sign language. No, not like that. Can they visually impaired person can read what is putting up on the PowerPoint or the over the screen? Not yet. In that sense, I think the faith community can make a lot more as we move forward, but yeah, right now it is still a work in progress. But over the years, what we are doing is raising awareness, making facilitating, helping people to understand more about disability, more about increased recognitions of the people living with disability in their community. The disability is not something, nothing to do with you. It can be any time. You yourself, I myself become disabled, or someone in the family become disabled. So yeah, such awareness we are raising as much as we can through different ways and means and different channels, through the partners, different mainstream organizations, through the faith community in this sense. We are, to be honest, we are more with churches.
Mm-hmm, right. Now, moving to your work with landmine survivors, you have also become a provider of prosthetics. And in fact, you provide 50% of the prosthetics for the entire country of Myanmar, which is just remarkable. So can you describe how your organization got into learning? This is a whole new thing you have to do, is learning about how to make and fit prosthetics. And actually, if you can just describe that process, I think for most of our listeners, it would be something new to hear. If someone is being fitted for a prosthetic, what from start to finish, what is that process like? And how have you been able to have that skill, really, of manufacture to be able to provide such an immense support for those landmine survivors in the country?
How we get involved? The questions about 50%, not very right yet. We don't want to claim that much, but somehow, somewhere reflected that way. So please forgive us. Not one in two person having prosthetic coming from us, not like that. But here in Myanmar, the service providers are very limited. So that was the very reason, in the first place, the Leprosy Mission Myanmar started to engage with the service provisions of prosthetic since as early as 2011, 2012, by the country opening more and more. So when Myanmar admitted landmine was the problem, in 2011, I remember correctly, in the Child Convention answer to the UN Human Rights Council by Myanmar as a state party, and through their report, the landmine was also a problem. That opened up the way for the landmine players, the global landmine players get the opportunity. So the global landmine players like Halo Trust or Dan Church Aid or Mine Action Groups, things like that, having the opportunity to come into Myanmar, starting to undertake the activity relating to the humanitarian, something called humanitarian mine action. So that was happened in parallel by that time. On the other hand, as Leprosy Mission Myanmar started to work for more people than leprosy, so increased need we identify. Among them, there are people who lost limb, who are amputees, who need prosthesis. Where can we refer them to? It was a difficult question. It's not easy questions for us to solve. By that time, around 2009, 10, 11, only in Pa'an, in Karen State, Pa'an Orthopedic and Rehabilitation Center, run by the Myanmar Red Cross Society, is a big player. And then another one is in Yangon, at the National Rehab Hospital, where it's a 50-bedded hospital, government hospital, where a unit provide prosthesis. That was it, where you can get prosthesis by that time. So imagine if you have somebody from far distant, like in Mandalay or somewhere, a long way for that person to go to those two places, and when you don't know when you can get your appointment, it is almost impossible if you need a prosthetic. So that was a kind of a motivation for us. Let's try ourselves to come up with a small unit. And the same time, when this opening up of the humanitarian mine action could bring in the resources, one of the resources they can bring in is for the victims' assistance. The victims due to landmine need assistance and help. So that humanitarian mine action provide. So the victim assistance also included provisions of prosthesis. So the financial assistant could make use for providing prosthetic. So while we cannot provide prosthetic straight away, but we have the desire and willingness to provide it. So one of the partners, Dan Church Aid, agreed to support our team to build a small team. Four physiotherapists from Leprosy Mission Myanmar underwent 6 months training. An expert trade technician came to Molomyai, stay with them, train them, because they are physiotherapists, have a medically trained in physiotherapy for 4 years already, They are much quicker to train. And then because he was an expatriate, he cannot continue to stay after 6 months. He went home, and our team, on their own, started walking as a team, going around to different locations since, and then provide the prosthesis. And then in 2012-13, a static workshop was set up in Daegu, which is a sort of the bigger town in the eastern part of the Bagol. So eastern Bagol, around that area, a lot of landmine victims are, so the support can be made legitimately so that the workshop was set up. But because of the very makeshift informal training, we realized that we need to provide proper capacity building and training to our own teams. So moving forward over the years, we send our staff to Viet Cot in Vietnam, in Hanoi, and also to Cambodia in the Cambodia School of PNO, Prosthetic and Ortho, CSPO. So it takes time, as you can see, and also resources, like you need to spend about $30,000 to $50,000 for a person to spend 3 years of training to get an internationally accredited certification to be able to undertake the job properly. So that sort of a painstaking exercise journey we went through, our team having more staff. It's not a quick turnaround over the years. By the year 2020, around 2021, at the transitions of the post Rakhine conflict, with higher victims in Rakhine State, as well as due to the conflict in 2021, started in 2021, more people are in need of the processes. Our team getting involved into this business of the providing prostheses in Myanmar. So over the years, I can say that in around 2015, 2016, the government initiated a few centers, like in Nijina General Hospital, like in Jaito, in the eastern part of the Shan State. Nijina is in the north, in the capital of Kachin State, and also in Mandalay, at the Mandalay Orthopedic Hospital. So three new centers emerged, started provide services. At the same time, the leprosy hospital near Mandalay, Yenadar Leprosy Hospital, is also having a workshop providing prostheses. So we are combining force together with them in provision of the prostheses. But the unique thing, since our inception of the prosthetic walk, we try to go around to different locations across Myanmar so that the service can be brought closer to those who need. So we are a little bit unique than other service provider. I think that also helped us to be able to reach to more people, but that was not without hiccup. I can say in a minute. But as you asked about the process of supporting people who need prostheses, over the years, let's say before this conflict, we need to provide training to the community members. We call them as helping hands. So provide training about understanding of disability, understanding of the United Nations Convention for the Rights of the Person with Disability, UNCRPD, which Myanmar is also a state party. Because Myanmar became a state party, Myanmar enacted disability rights law, which is also quite a comprehensive legislation, enacted in 2015. We talk a lot about those trained to those people in the community known as helping hand, and they were tasked with identifying people who need prosthetic. So to the places where we go for the mobile clinic, especially these guys ran there initially and identify, and we follow them. And so that people were gathered together, and our mobile team reached them and then started provision of the prosthesis. So whether it is in a static or the mobile setting, when a case of amputee is referred, you need a physiotherapist, need to start walking for the preparation of the provision of the prosthesis, so to say. In that process, I think in a quick manner, things like the pre-prosthetic physiotherapy exercises, such as bandaging, the muscle strengthening exercises, and also application of the assisted devices like elbow crutches or axillary crutches to use properly before prosthetic was fitted, and also coping trauma healing if we can, like more of a psychosocial support aspect, which many of the people who lost limb experienced too. And also we need to raise awareness, help the victim and the patient understand about their phantom limb, the pain arising from the limbs, the toe tips, which is no longer there, to have understanding and ability to cope with, and also to have a better hygienic care and also prevention of the deformities. So quite a significant time one will need to prepare that way. So if we have ability to prepare properly over those topics and the practices, a patient will be ready to start providing prosthesis, which usually take about 3-4 weeks if it is a new case, the first time user. Otherwise, a person sent to the workshop, our workshop, without those processes went through, that person will need to spend 2 months or more than 2 months to cope with all those understanding of all those processes, meaning that you will need more time, you will need more food to provide, somebody accompany them, need to spend more time with them, lost incomes or wages if they did not need to come. Things like that are also part of the consideration. And then where they are in the workshop or in the mobile workshop, when ready, the fitting will need to start process as usual, taking the stump, the socket, and then put up different components. And nowadays, there are different types of components you can use. They are modular, readily made, very easy to fit. Just only when you get the socket ready, you just put together. But the main chunk of the process, provision of the prosthesis, is not just only production of the prosthetic as a material, but fitting it into the stump properly, nurturing, helping the victim to be able to walk confidently on the new leg, the prosthetic, so that they can walk, they can climb, they have different functions of the leg one would expect as if they have a natural original leg. So these are the kind of the priorities we need to prioritize. Otherwise, the money financially for the material we need to buy and then make for them, the staff time, the transportation times, many things will be wasted if a patient cannot use the prosthetic properly. So, yeah.
Thank you for that extended answer. And one of the things I'd like to go back to in your response was you mentioned you spent quite a bit of time describing the physical dynamics of the support that you provide for landmine survivors, but you just briefly mentioned, and I want to pull this thread more, you touched upon the profound psychological, social support that they need, and I can only imagine what that would, what level of trauma that would be in terms of adjusting to losing a limb and then eventually, hopefully, being able to get fitted for a prosthetic. So can you describe in some more detail the nature of the trauma that you found among landmine survivors and what your organization has done to be able to provide that essential psychological, social support, as you say?
Thank you. Among the landmine victims, especially, there are, again, different responses we came across. We have a different types of the victims. One of the victims, we need to talk in a different set of questions, as it's about the children, not now. If they used to be the capable combatant warriors, fighters before, who used to be authoritative before stepping on a landmine or losing their limbs, and suddenly you lost your limb. That makes many we came across in a very difficult psychological mode for them to cope with. Also because of losing their limbs, and also because of, especially when they did not know when they can receive prosthesis, because the setting is too difficult for them to have an organization. Nowadays, I understand more and more organizations, not even a lot, trying to provide prosthesis as much as they can. So meaning that more hopes can be given. But looking back last two, three years ago, one of the service users we provided said, at one point I was thinking to put my pistol in my head and kill myself, and then came across with us, and then slowly he recovered. So the main thing over the years, we provide as an organization, with the limited human resources, is bringing them to get to a point where they have a prosthetic provided properly so that they can walk again. But more and more, we started to notice that the need for the more psychosocial support, so that our team is also now making more intentional facilitation, especially. So when we say facilitation, is that when people coming together in the workshop or in the static workshop where we have it, and also in the mobile setting, when the victims come and sit together. So for example, one victim who just lost only one limb below knee, might have a lot of pain and the groaning about that, and a lot of sorrows and a lot of regrets, a lot of losing hope. But sitting next to somebody who has lost two limbs above knee, even much higher loss, did not having that kind of the psychological trauma like the other one with just single limb loss. So they can talk together more. So talking like that will also alleviate a lot. And also among the peer, some of the service users return back again for the second or third time of the prosthesis, change of the new prosthetic after a few years, so that they can also came back with the success story experiences they experienced with the new leg in their life, in their house, or in their community, which is also a lot of helping and support. Peer support is the very best thing among them. So our responsibility, what we feel is that if our team have a proper facilitation, consolation, and helping them to speak properly so that they can get to a direction of motivations and the overcoming the challenges. So these are currently our team is doing more in the workshop, not just only providing prosthesis, but yeah, talking, making more intentional conversation, discussing section among the peers. Over to you.
Right. It's really heartwarming to hear that. And I especially appreciate your comment on how peer-to-peer interaction just does so much. I mean, that's something I'm always amazed and heartwarmed by, is that when you're going through a certain tragedy in life, whether it's a trauma or a misfortune or even coming out of an addiction, you know, it's it seems counterintuitive, and yet you always come back to there's something within us humans as social creatures that it actually feels good to be around people who are going through something similar and can share, and hearing them talk and having them hear us talk. There's something about that connection that doesn't kind of bring you deeper into despair or to, you know, to just being absorbed in this particular issue, but actually becomes a source of empowerment and a source of agency and a source of being able to better understand and respond to what your situation is through this connection with others who are going through something different. And that relates to another issue that your center has done, which is you have this theme of leprosy and disability champions, of empowering local communities, having them speak for themselves, making major contributions to society, and really wanting to champion their agency and their leadership. I think that's so wonderful. And I think it's also, you know, as we're talking about these kinds of issues, I just think it's very important that we're showing people in their full humanity. We're not taking any of that humanity away. We're not falling into the trap of pity, which is not reciprocal, which is really one-way traffic, which doesn't really benefit anyone, but are being able to talk plainly about the reality, and obviously the very painful reality, obviously the physical pain, but beyond the physical pain, all the pain that comes from lack of equality and whatever the disability, whatever limitations is impacted and brought on by the disability, that one is able to not take away that those last bits of dignity and agency and humanity, and to not speak for those, but to empower them to speak for themselves and to feel. And to still be able to access what they have to offer to society, which then is a win-win for both. And so I wonder if you can talk about that aspect of it, of just what it's like to where this mission comes from, to want to not take away this agency, to make sure that you encourage the agency. Why that's important to you, and how that particular policy and mindset has been put into action through your organization.
Thank you. The champions thing is quite encouraging, and also it's a pathway for all of us to pursue, isn't it? Nothing about us without us. Yeah, we like to say more, nothing about us without all of us, but in both slogans, the centrality of the persons affected by leprosy or person with disability is obvious. So they need to be in the center. Like I responded earlier in my answers about peer to peer, if they can be more powerful agent, powerful peer, a lot can be made, isn't it? So this is something we all need to be aware about. We all need to be conscious about to work on it. As an organization like us, working in this area, need to convince as well to the donors and funders alike, so that the resources can be made available in nurturing those people. Because people living with disability, in this case landmine victims, a lot of situation change among them in their life. So a lot of continuation of support, and a lot of help and the facilitation so that they can come back into the society as regular, normal people. To do that, a long way to do. On top of that, what we wish and what we want to do is that making them a champion, making them become a more vocal advocate. That is not something we can expect from them on their own. For us as a wider society, need to be proactively work on that. Then only there will be platforms and the opportunities and the opening up for them to do. So yeah, we try our best to make this within the organization. On the other hand, we will also continue to promote the donors and funders alike, so that we can make available longer term, especially financial support. When we look at the organizational landscape, organizations of people with disability, organizations of persons affected by leprosy, it is a limited landscape here in Myanmar, simply because of the our historical background of Myanmar. The space for the civil society was also not that wide, open for or something a few years back and now closed again. So that them to be more proactively participate and play, we cannot just expect them to do. We need an additional thing, individually them to receive the holistic support so that they become able, they become functional. Beyond that, to become active participant within the society, in the platform, as organizations of persons with disability or organizations of persons affected by leprosy, more intentional support, I think, at least bottom line, will need. Otherwise, there will be the risk of just a tokenism. And also, yeah, people will not be regarded as an important thing. When only the wider society regard this is a need, the changes in the wider society, like breaking down the barrier, the interventions like barrier-free transportation, barrier-free office spaces, barrier-free educations, healthcare, a lot of attitudinal barrier changes can be taken place.
Have you seen some of those changes or shifts in Burmese society, even in a small way over time, take place to any extent?
It is happening. Like leprosy organization, there are a few champions. Yeah, they are trying as of today. Yeah, today, the 29th of June, the Usowin Leprosy Affected Person Chair traveling to Bali to attend series of meetings, including International Leprosy Congress. And I think Myanmar champions having a limited opportunity because of the closeness of the country last 4 or 5 years. Before that, there were some examples. But yeah, to be honest, to be frank, a lot more, not just only in those people who are recognizable among the person with disability, recognizable just only in Yangon or Mandalay, big city, who have a bigger mouth and bigger voice. Only that, not about the people in the rural community, in the far-flung area, because Myanmar is very big and wide country, 70% are rural populations, just only 30 in the urban center. So a lot need to be done to have in that aspect. So not that it is not happening. Some people like Usowin, I just mentioned, Sri Minda Foundation, Umiatuwin himself, a number of other figures, Myanmar Independent Living, there are a number of younger champions are working on it. But what I would like to see, we need to see, is that more and more champions in every corner of the country, in this big country, representing different constituencies.
Right, of course, and that's what you're continuing to work for. I want to go to the physical now and turn back to the physical side of the prosthetics and get into the factory. I mean, as I understand it, you actually, after taking trips to within the region of Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, and seeing the work that they've done, which goes back obviously to the Vietnam War time, and as that spilled across the borders and the landmine and casualties that came from there that they're still dealing with. And as I understand it, you've then set up, in addition to the training of the trainers and the physiotherapists, you've also set up a prosthetics factory in Myanmar. Can you go into a bit more detail about that?
Yeah, we call static workshop, which, as I mentioned, in Pa'an, in Yangon, Mandalay, Jiangto, in our own TLM Myanmar, run a few workshops in Daegu, in the Bogor East, and in Sitwe in the west, capital of Rakhine State, which is still operating as of now, and Pakoku. So those are the static workshop where you have a building, where you have a machineries, where you have a staff, where people can come. And over the years, people recognize and then people know that if we go there, you can receive services. So like, for example, our workshop in Daegu is now having a long list of registration waiting people to receive prosthesis services. But on the other hand, from the ministry side, government side, understandably, because of the exodus of the professionals and the staff in 2021, the CDM, that suffered a lot. The strength reduced significantly in the workshop in Yangon, in Michina, in Jiangto, and also to a degree, the workshop in Mandalay suspended. Now, with the wake of the earthquake, now they are resuming, but I'm not sure how the human resources are shuffling and operating. I understand it is quite struggling to have enough strength. So that made our workshop in Daegu, in Pakoku, and the Sitwe busy, so that more people are coming. So when we talk about the static workshop, there are also a bit of challenges in the last 5 years context, especially the citizenship scrutiny cards, CSE, which we all need to have it. Before time, when you don't have one, you will find difficult to travel, not easy to travel. But last 4 or 5 years, even if you have one, if you are from Sagaing region, if you are from Rakhine State, if you are from Shan State, a number starting with 13 slash or starting with 5 slash or something like that, if your CSE representing a township with the suspicions of from the authority, you can be easily harassed or you can be easily even arrested to an extent. But yeah, also you need to pay, things like that happen. So they're quite a large fear factors for the people travel from one place to another. So what if you are from those places? That's a challenge for the people to go to a static clinic and workshop. So we also attempt a mobile workshop to a few locations, not a lot because of the constraint of the human resources. Like you mentioned, we need to send students to Cambodia or Vietnam to get the training, 2-3 years training, because we cannot in Myanmar locally provide training. There used to be a training in Myanmar, 2015-16 to 2021, which was suspended because of the school closures. So that we still need to send to those places. So we have limited number of technicians, so we cannot send, we can also not send to many destinations. Currently, we have two mobile workshops. But when you have a static workshop, it is quite straightforward. Like I mentioned, setting up thing, all are in place. You have a number of luxuries of more stable electricity, for example. And now we are to set up in a mobile workshop. We need to identify where to set up. We need to have a host who trusts on us, who accept us. We need to have a good relationship with them. And also we need to have them collect it. So I mentioned earlier, we need to train. That was prior to 2021. We need to train people so that they identify the victims first so that the mobile team go. Nowadays, with the conflicts, with the earthquake now, it's a lot easier for people to identify. So places like in the part of the Shan State, 100 plus people already accumulated so that our team go there, start providing. So setting up a workshop was not a straightforward and easy thing. Like, for example, you cannot expect a regular steady electricity. Even the choice of generators, for example, to choose a very state-of-the-art generator with a key trigger, you cannot bring there, use it, because the fuel you might get there will not be pure enough so that the generator can easily break down. When it breaks down, you cannot find the person to fix it easily. So we have to use a very old traditional dynamo type generator, which don't care the unpurified gasoline or diesel. So the noises and the electricity, that's how we, our machinery to run and then produce it. So this is the setting up of the mobile units. But when we say mobile unit, it is, you know, we need to be there talking about 100 or 200 numbers of people who lost their limb. It takes almost more than a year. So that's what we meant by the mobile workshop, where we try to overcome when people like the citizenship scrutiny card with a certain area cannot come, we get there so that the people can receive the prosthesis they need. So this is how the setting up of the workshop in two cents. I talked to.
You mentioned in your answer, you refer to the last 5 years being especially difficult, which I think would come as really no surprise to our listeners. And so I'd like to expand more in that direction, because I know also on your website there have been references to some of the increased challenges that have been faced in the wake of the coup and the conflict, and to say nothing of just, we've done other episodes on this in this series and as part of our platform, just the level of landmine contamination now in Myanmar is also at a tragic high. And so I imagine those survivors from landmines are, those numbers are tragically also going up, but along with those numbers going up is the difficulty in reaching them. And so can you talk a bit more about in the particular challenges that these last 5 years have been to your mission?
Yes, number obviously going up significantly, but we don't know exact number. It is not something published or not easy to collect the figures and the number. A few days ago, talking with a colleague in a part of Shan State, surveying around, planning to survey eight towns. So what in one town identify about 20 people already. So what we are told is that there will be at least 150 additional to our workshop will come as a waiting list. So right now we have about 120 waited there, which we are providing, meaning another 120 will come forward with that use. And on the other hand, other part in Rakhine State, talking about around 100, we already provide support. Those are around the city, the capital, the township city, the city area. You know, currently city is locked down, so you cannot go out or enter, only flight you can enter, so that there is no in and out. Even within the lockdown, you are having around 100 victims. Recently, we are hearing the landmine exploded along the Strand Road, where we used to walk a very nice evening walk, looking at the point or the to the sea, are filled with the landmine. And many frequent injuries we are hearing. So when people estimating stepping outside of city in the Rakhine State, it can be just only in Rakhine State, it can be 1,000 or so. So these are the number we are talking about, just only in that part in Shan State and in Rakhine State. So if you add up with what about in Karen State, Kayin State, if you add up with what about in Karani area, what about in the Kachin State, and the heartland in Zagain or Magui region, even coming down into Bago region. So one of the statistics we have it from 2020 to 2025 among the children. During the period, we provided prosthesis to 138 children who are under 18 years old. Among them, 41 of them are children inflicted their loss of limbs due to landmines or shell or the injury due to the conflicts. So among them, just only in 2020, there are only 6 cases we received. They all are from Rakhine State. In 2021, we received 3 children from Rakhine State. Yeah, only 3 cases in 2021. In 2022, there was a child in the Northern Shan State. There was 1 child from Rakhine State. Going to 2023, the number of children lost their limbs due to conflict jumped to 8. 2 from Rakhine State, 3 from Zagain region, 2 from Karen State, 1 from Pekong in Southern Shan. In 2024, the number further jumped to 2022, sadly. 4 children are from the Bago Eastern side, 1 from Chin State, 2 from Kaya State, 2 from Magui region, and the northern part of the Magui region, Saw Gango area. 4 from Rakhine State and 5 from Zagain region and 2 from Shan State. In 2025, this year, we are seeing, thankfully, only 2 children. We don't know how many it will be. So that way, the number of children, as I mentioned, in 2020, just only small number, gone up to the 20-plus number, which is a sad thing to see. So, yeah, the victims, as I said, before 2021, when we go around, we need to mobilize and we need to raise awareness and the collection of the data so that we have enough number of the victims who lost limbs. Now, these are people just waiting there. The only thing is that we just cannot go. Enough number of mobile unit can go to provide it. Even if we go, it is not about one-time thing. No, they will need the prosthetic for the rest of their life. So management's perspective, we just not only need to respond this time, we need to produce a lot more human resources and technicians. We need to open up more facilities and center so that people can receive more such services closer to their places.
You know, as you describe that, it sounds to me almost like I'm feeling this imagery or this analogy of like this this lone firefighter or this very small firefighting team that with limited resources that is in this conflagration that is now spreading and taking off, this fire that is just is overwhelming this very small team trying to put it out, because, you know, you're describing the pre-coup situation of the at that time, you know, the devastation of work, both in terms of the physical with leprosy and landmine survivors, as well as with the social, psychological, equality, bias, discrimination, etc. But then the coup has only just exacerbated all of that on many levels. I mean, it's kind of been a double whammy of, you know, on one hand of making far more victims, and then the other hand, making it far harder to access and treat those victims. And then we could also go back to what you said a few minutes ago, that it's also making it harder to, with the electricity and generator issues, to be able to provide the, to get the resources that are needed, even if there were access to an increasing number of victims. So it's really overwhelming on all scales. And so I wonder, you know, you're obviously a professional, you have expertise, you've been in this area a while, it's not your first rodeo, we can say. At the same time, you know, this is as is the case, and we haven't even gotten to the earthquake yet, but as is the case for so many people in Myanmar, it's just become one layer on top of another layer on top of another that's having to deal with. So I just wonder if you can say something about how you're doing with this emotionally, and how you're orienting towards it, how you're keeping up the strength and the encouragement, because, you know, these are dark days we're going through, and yet you're, as far as your capacity and your organization's capacity is able to provide, you are fitting into a crucial service and a crucial need here, but, you know, the odds are becoming less favorable at this time. And so how are you keeping your morale up and the morale of your team through these days?
Thank you. I mean, yes, we try to overcome, and also we try to see the in the lens of those disasters and difficult situations as an opportunity. You know, looking back to 2008, Cyclone Nargis was the darkest part of our country history, isn't it? 150,000 people die. One might argue, not necessary, isn't it, compared to the scale of the intensity of the cyclone in Bangladesh, you know, more frequency and even larger strength, not that number die. But yeah, we suffer. But through that, the country opened up, and then things like what we could do was managed to do through the disaster. Now, fast forward to 2025. I think if we continue to see that lens, take the opportunity of setting up, preparing ourselves to prepare for the future. We don't know how long, but as much as we can. Now, as you said, adding up with the earthquake, you know, before that, we are just overwhelmingly talking about the burden due to the conflicts. With the earthquake, for example, authorities from SAC side, They talk more about the need of the processes for the people who lost limb due to the earthquake, which is a bit awkward to hear, but yeah, let's try. Why not? Yeah. If they open up the facility for that, just in the sense of the earthquake victim, we hope that it can benefit to more people to serve. You know, as we speak, a center in Mandalay has been started providing services. But the main challenge, as you said, is because of the shortage of the human resources. So we don't know how that arrangement could do. And also in other more places, can we do? You know, we have a frequent conversation with different groups and people who wanted to do, but what we can encourage them is that there is no shortcut. They need to go through a process of setting up and also nurturing the human resources in their part of the country. Then only you also need the dedicated champions who are committed in this professional field. That, and also who are dedicated to sacrifice. No, I don't use the word sacrifice, to be in the difficult part of the country. Then only people can receive easily. Not necessary to travel a long way. So things like that will be necessary. So this is how we see and try to tell ourselves and also talk to our partners and the friends alike. And also with the earthquake response, we can see that hopefully more financial resources can be mobilized. And part of the financial resources, it is our responsibility to advocate among them, not only to build houses back again, not only to do this and that disaster risk reduction, but also for the rehabilitation, especially in the physical rehabilitation, especially for the provision of the services, assisted devices, including prostheses. So if we can convince more to them, to the people who can provide funding and donor, maybe we can come up with more facilities. We can come up with more budget to train more number of young people so that they may go away for 2-3 years from now, but can come back. A lot are among the unknown things, but yeah, we need to continue to pursue for that. And also at the same time, linking up with what you discuss about the karma thing, which is closely linked to the charitable approach and model, especially in the prosthetic service provision, there are groups and people who tend to use politically, so to say, you can make a ceremony with 100 people receive on the stage new prostheses. But like I mentioned, prosthesis provision is not like that single event donating leg like that. So instead of, and again, among the wider platform, we also need to have more coordination and discussions and convincing among each other to do a right way. To do a right way, also need to have more understanding. And I hope that what I just talked through the podcast, more people can listen, having understanding and the process, which we cannot skip, need to do it. Then only people will receive what they need. They can be back into the community as an equal participant, even though they need to fix their coping mechanism, psychosocial, psychological trauma they experience. Yes, a lot to carry on.
Yeah, that's certainly a lot there. And I think I speak for listeners that are still tuning in now with this sense of appreciation and really admiration for what you're continuing to do and how just how active and how proactive you're being through all of this. And, you know, even through these difficult times between coup and earthquake, just how much you and your organization are doing to keep finding areas of daylight and of activity, even if they're less than ideal, to keep pushing through. I think that's just incredibly inspiring to hear. You did talk in your last answer about the children who are being impacted, which is just incredibly tragic and incredibly horrific. Just an extremely sensitive area that I think is hard for a lot of us to really think about this reality of these horrific injuries happening to children, and children also seeing their peers as well as their caregivers and family members and neighbors that are also suffering in this way. That level of trauma is just really beyond comprehension. But I'd like to prompt you, you know, sensitively to share with us, when children are the landmine survivors, when they have gone through this horrific injury and, you know, thankfully by the grace of God survived, what are the special considerations? What are the different unique ways of interacting with a child survivor of a landmine that would be different from an adult?
Yeah, it's different, very different, isn't it? You cannot send that kid to a center on their own and they cannot travel. A mom, maybe, if not, two person, a company, isn't it? When such a company person with the kid, with the child, to the center, go through the exercises, the kid who will encounter with the technicians and the workers in the center who are very strange to them, need a lot, it's quite a length of the time, isn't it, to orientate him or herself, then start working on the understanding of the process of the prosthesis, you know, the bandaging, a number of things. A lot of intensity you will need it. And also from our technician side, also who are good at dealing with the different set of skills, isn't it? Dealing with kids on top of what you would normally deal with the adult. That one part. So, yeah, obviously you will take a longer time than adult, and then they will go back home after everything fitting well and the okay sort of sign off. But they need to come back more frequent than the adult counterparts, meaning that they will need, unless they have their own money. But here in Myanmar, unfortunately, as a country with the highest amount of out-of-pocket service for the healthcare needs, a lot of families are not in a position to use their money out of their pocket. So they will continue to need or rely on organizations like us, which may or may not be able to cover everything, all things they need to cover. So other partner organizations, more of a referral pathway and network we need to establish so that they can come as the child continuously grow their height, their size of their thigh or their leg, the knee. Based on that, refitting will require more. So, yeah, as a growing child, the energy will be there, which is in a better side, but the growth, we need the provision of the prosthesis need to be catch up with it. The frequent travel cost in Myanmar nowadays, traveling from one place to another, is enormous, not just only for the kids, for the mother, auntie, whoever come along with. As the younger the child, the more people will need to take care of it. And also the economic side of the mother, if it is a breadwinner in the family, what do you do? How do you do to compensate while the mother away from the family home with them? So, yeah, this is what I think many need to have understanding that it is not a straight line, straightforward. That's why among the poorest of the poor, becoming the people and the family of person living with disability in the society is not a surprising thing, just because of those related things which they are spirally going down, unless the society proactively support them.
I think one of the things that I'm hearing in many of your answers, which I want to underscore for listeners because I think this is an important point, is that the treatment that you're providing, that you have to provide for, and we're talking here prosthetics, especially for landmine survivors, is it's not a one-off. There is a sustained period of having to fit it and do physiotherapy and check on it and engage with the patient. And so it's not just a question of accessing a patient one time in one place and then they're good, as it could be with some other treatment. It's a sustained interaction back and forth. And that's where some of the challenges have come in Myanmar, and especially more recently with the work that you're doing. And that brings us to the earthquake. And you've referenced this in some of your answers, but I want to just highlight and focus on this for a moment. Because it sounds like the earthquake brought a couple of things in two different directions. I mean, obviously, it blocked off roads and it created many more victims, and and access became tighter for any number of reasons, and a host of other unfortunate and negative implications. And yet, at the same time, it you mentioned how it did provide an opening of how you're able to work with the regime in supporting those who need prosthetics, not for landmine injuries, but for being injured in the earthquake. And I wonder also if it's brought any international focus or attention on the overall work you're doing and getting greater funding or support in that way. And so can you break down just the impact of the earthquake and all these different dimensions and directions that it's that you found through your work and organization?
Yeah, we impact. Yeah, our presence in Mandalay, the community we walk in, also impacted significantly with the earthquake. So we also need to get help to the members of the community we are walking with. That one thing. But yeah, I talk with my colleagues a few weeks ago that the fact that 28th of March, this earthquake took place, was also a blessing, so to say, international press present in town, so that the capture of the spectacular things in Myanmar, the wider world, can be seen, and the mobilizations of the support can be made, which to me is an amazing thing. If it is about a week after 27th of March or 2 weeks after that, I think the notice and the mobilization will not be that that big, isn't it? So that my small reflection. And for the international, the partners and the communities, if the building back of the country, not just only for the earthquake, isn't it? Even earthquake, 11 billion financial term loss, that's according to the World Bank accounting of the loss in term. So building back the area we are focusing on need also be to talk about, simply because of the increased need. Lastly, due to the earthquake, but before the earthquake, with the conflict, is a significantly higher number of the victims are need and scatter all over the country. And with the travel restrictions, and also even if the travel restriction non-existent, and the availability of the services are also still very limited. And the country is also at the transitional stage. So with the more autonomy and more freedom, which all people are looking at, Kachin will have their own physical rehabilitation center and walk. And Shan will also, bigger Shan State, 2, 3, 4, 5, I don't know how many, they will need to have it. On Chin State, on Rakhine State, they will need to have it. In Kayin State, Karani State, they must have it. So the need will be enormous. I want to tell the colleagues not to be shunned away or shy away from facing the need, helping the needs to be met. But the needs, those needs are the basic needs for a population like this. Because we just not only talk about rights of the people with disability at the advocacy front and the level, unless the health component, physical rehabilitation components for the physically disabled, I am talking about, but hearing, and who, those who lost hearing, those who cannot see, those who are living with intellectual disability, a lot of rehabilitation needs are in need of the people, not only in Myanmar, so to say, but in Myanmar, is the primary level, the healthcare system is non-existent. So I hope and I believe that if more such services we can make to start with prosthesis, but the people who make the support for the prosthesis can also support making fixing a wheelchair, support for somebody who lost their spinal cord injury, who cannot move their limbs anymore, provision of the assistive devices. Many can be done through those initiatives, not just only for prosthesis. So then only the people living with disability can realize what we as a global family are talking about. Them need to be part of the wider society, get back to get have, receive the equal right. That will happen.
Mm-hmm. I understand also another problem since the coup, now talking about the last 5 years, is that the regime has not provided access, in some cases outright blocked it, for the prosthetics work towards those landmine survivors, because it is claimed and called those landmine survivors part of the resistance, even though, as we know, landmines are laid in all sorts of areas with civilians, and many who step on landmines are not part of any ERO or PDF or military or armed force at all. They're just normal people. And yet there has been a concern that those civilians who have triggered those landmines, that access to supporting them is being blocked because they're being labeled erroneously by the regime as being part of this resistance. What more can you say about that?
Yeah, this is something we cannot deny it, and we are seeing it, and that makes also very fearful for people to go. So that makes people reluctant to go even some places which might offer the service but cannot go or dare not to go. So yes, I think when a person lost their limb, his or her limb, whether they are a fighter of a group fighting against another group or a civilian, they are the same, isn't it? And also the psychology is also, yeah, some people might have anger and more determination, but at that point, it is the most important thing is that to help them out to get it. So we just need to see them as person and as a people, not as, especially for us as a part of the healthcare provider, isn't it? We cannot have the lens of seeing them, but from the authority side, it is very difficult to see and tell. That's why, you know, talking about the statistics in Rakhine, the Sitwe cover only 100 right now. Only the people inside Sitwe are receiving. What about other people outside Sitwe? We can't do it unless the blockade, as you said, are released or relieved, which we cannot see in a near future, which is a sad thing. So I think we must all try every, you know, especially those who are in a position of authority to press the button. Please try help us to overcome the access of people to get it, especially the materials to make the process, which is not available in country. So need to get from outside of the country, which is also terribly, terribly difficult. If the restrictions and blockade over, that will be a lot easier. So yeah, a lot need to be asked.
Mm-hmm. Right. What would you like our audience to know about you? For someone as yourself, you have worked with leprosy victims and landmine survivors for so many years now. It's been your profession. You've interacted with so many of them and heard so many of their voices, their stories. What would you like our international audience to understand about these people that you work with? And if you can bring their voice out to our platform, what would you like people to know?
I think the most important thing I think I'd like people to know is that at this time, the need of this thing, prosthesis, is felt by many. 2-3 years ago, if someone might be ignorant about the relevance or importance of this, nowadays, no longer in a position to continue to say so. Among them, different groups and players, an organization wanting and willing to do. In doing so is also based on our own experience. It's not an easy journey. A lot of painstaking undertaking and determinations and the sacrifice and the dedication and commitment, we will need it to make this sort of services happen and available. Not only the dollars term, we will need it, but those are in needed. But for those other things, which I mentioned, difficult to come together, make it easier to come together, the financial support, if you make available, I think the life will be much easier to organize and set up more services, those kinds of services in a big country like Myanmar, where understandably more groups of people are in need and want of having in their own regions and the states and the places. I think which we all have a degree of obligations and, yeah, responsibility to make it happen and take our responsibility as much as we can and as much part we can take. That's I think that's a message I want to convey.
Sure. Another thing that's occurring to me is that since the coup, we've seen a certain kind of solidarity and understanding across Myanmar society that that has really been quite unprecedented. And I'm thinking especially of, this is imperfect. It's not to gloss over and say everything's all good, but there have been outpourings and signs of support from some sectors of Burmese society towards the Rohingya community and towards the LGBT community that we, in particular, I would say that these two especially marginalized communities that have been perhaps understood and brought in and seen as part of the whole of the community in ways they haven't before. And so, you know, certainly, as we've talked about in this conversation, leprosy victims and landmine survivors are also certain people with disabilities in general. We can actually expand it to just that greater category of the nearly 5%, I think you quoted from the census, that that people with disabilities are another marginalized community in Myanmar, and marginalized not just in terms of their disability, but also in terms of this very unfortunate, tragic, faith-based discrimination, we can say, that that is also, targeting what they might have done to, you know, deserve this or incur this blaming the victim. And so since the coup, is there any silver lining that you've identified of where there's been a greater acceptance or integration or connection with those with disabilities that perhaps you did not see after the coup, or perhaps, I don't know, maybe that hasn't happened with this group. What have you noticed?
Not very significantly, but in Rakhine State, where we have continued walk, we are now having the Muslim or Rohingya victims in situ. Again, still not very easy to comprehend, simply because of the service user coming to our facility and the workshop, they don't disclose all the real stories. So we are wondering, our team is wondering, those people from such community like Muslim community, are they just simply stepping onto landmines and then got injured and come to us? Or are they because of the part forced to be conscription under the conscription law and then also got injured? So that is also another phenomena. So it is important. Yeah, you make the highlight about those LGBT or those marginalized Muslim Rohingya community. I think continue to give attention of what happened, what make that happen to the stage where they are right now. Like I just mentioned, increased number just in the cohort of Sitwe level. Dig deeper might have more understanding. So yeah, other than that, our ability to see the bigger picture is limited, but that's what I can share with you.
Do you, in this revolution, and talking not just of a revolution of armed resistance, but or of government, but a revolution of mind, of spirit, of society, which people are saying this very much is, revolutions do give opportunities for new ways of thought and new structures that haven't been perceived as possible before. And so do you, perhaps in the future when things are hopefully sooner, when things are calmer and more stable, do you see the opportunity, the window for being able to pursue certain kinds of acceptance and integration of people with disabilities into Burmese society based on this, we could say, revolution of thought that's been going on in these last few years, seeing things a different way than has been formulated before. Do you see certain possibilities that could be opening up for inclusion, even if they're not exactly occurring now? And as you say, you don't have, you're so focused on the mission, you don't have the broader sense of what's going on society-wide. But do you see an opening or window that perhaps hasn't been there before to this extent?
I do. I mean, things like more people and groups are in interest of providing the support they need to support. So that is a bigger, wider window of opportunity. Increasing awareness of disability, talking more about the disability inclusion as a mandatory thing among the mainstream organization, among the humanitarian assistance and the earthquake response. Although advocacy advises, we talk about need to be inclusive. Whether it really inclusive was another matter, but more and more surely are taking place. So based on the momentum built up since 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, quite a while, more of an advocacy, rights of person with disability rights law in place, although with a setback, now more physical disabilities are common across the country with the conflict and the increased attention of the different groups and society and organization, which I hope that more services can come up. As I mentioned, without services, without proper intervention, person with disability to get involved into the wider society will still be limited. So missing ingredient, which is a services provision, especially health side, physical rehabilitation, not only physical disabled, but other different types of disability, if they can receive more support they need, inclusion, ability, raising awareness and also recognition to them, for sure, definitely increase. But to that happen systematically, to that happen in more proper organized manner, people like us together with more partners and also the supporters and the donors alike, because this is not a short term. A lot of things are in need of a longer term. So while I can see the hope and the window, but also need to be accompanied, followed by the actual deeds of us with the support we need, both financial time and the human resources and the commitment.
So thank you so much, Dr. Zamo Aung, for being on and speaking to us about your work as Executive Director for the Leprosy Mission Myanmar, which, as we've learned, is not just focused on leprosy, but also doing so much to help disabled people in general, and particularly those landmine survivors.
Thank you. Thank you bringing out all the insight of Myanmar, and I fully in belief that what you are doing, bringing from different corners of the society, wide-ranging topics which need to cover with our own ability and the eyes. We cannot see everything. So your platform is really a big help to all of us as we hopefully transitioning into a next phase of the country. And also, let's pray together that Myanmar can be transformed, can stop fighting and can stop inflicting and conflicting each other, which is not easy, but so I think, that's all from me. Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode in full. If you found our guest story of value, please consider taking a further step beyond just being a listener and become an active supporter. Your contributions directly help us to continue to amplify voices from and about Myanmar, create more impactful content, and keep the conversation alive at a time when global attention is fading. Every donation, whether big or small, goes into producing more episodes like this one, sharing untold stories and ensuring they reach those who care. To learn more about how you can support us, visit insightmyanmar.org/donation.
Yarananga yaunya na da du ya dana dia di ganeza de mana we gara besa ya na besa ya ho ba yarananda da yarananga na yarananya da yarananga poda ba yarananga.